And honestly, it might sound, I think the challenge as a new dog owner is you don't quite understand the relationship between the problem and the solution.
Yeah.
You certainly don't see the relationship between the problem and another problem, mm-hmm. or a totally different solution that might not even make sense at first. But when you dive into it, you're like, aha, this mm-hmm. is the realization I had as a student when I came to McCann Dogs, when I was learning all sorts of things about leadership and good information. Timing, which mm-hmm. is something that we're going to talk about tonight. Good timing can solve a lot of your problems, but understanding when, why, and how to apply that good timing in your training can make a big difference. Things like pulling on leash, what else? Barking, jumping up, digging in the yard, all those things where you're
ignoring,
like,
ignoring you, not coming when they're called.
Yeah, it's just, you know, these common frustrations that you have. We're going to give you some strategies to break down, to identify the problems and then break them down. By the end of tonight's show, you're going to be a bit of an expert at how to, what the changes that you need to make your pup more successful. Because here's the good news. Is that they're capable of figuring it out with good information. Here's the bad news.
And quickly.
Yeah, here's the bad news, is that they're learning all the time. Mm-hmm. And whether you're giving them good information or not, they're starting to figure things out for themselves. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about that.
And the good and the bad news, because it's both, is that everything depends on you.
Totally.
Your dog is only going to be as good or as bad as the 100%. Information or the training that you give them. So the more educated you can be, the better off your dog will be. So you're already doing a great thing by being here with us for the next little bit.
Which is why you're here.
Yeah.
And we're excited to have you. Now, you might be, I know there's a lot of new people in the chat I saw, and this might be your first
right.
McCann dog training video with us. You know, we feature some amazing dog trainers from our staff. Very accomplished, very successful. They have tons and tons of experience. McCann Dogs has been training dogs for more than 40 years. And mm-hmm. we train more than 100,000 dogs in our training facility. Every week, we get to see more than 500 dogs in the building. And our incredible group of trainers are helping people work through exactly the same challenges that you have. And sort of a byproduct of that, or you know, something that we gain from it, is some of that, the knowledge and experience as we have these conversations, you know, in the kitchen or in mm-hmm. passing at the training facility, which helps us to refine the message for you today. And we're excited to share that with you. Now, again, if this is your first time, I'm Ken Steep. This is Kale McCann.
Hello.
We're professional dog trainers at McCann Dogs. And in tonight's show, we're going to talk about three dog training steps to stop any unwanted behavior. Welcome back to McCann Dogs. So buttons.
Are you skipping your romper room to save time, or are you?
Yeah, I thought okay. we got off a little bit late.
Yes.
I mean, let's do that. Let's do that just for fun.
Maybe like a quick version.
Yeah, really quickly. I'd love to know where you're joining us from. We have students from all over the world. I think we have 68 countries represented.
Russian 70.
From our online training students. And it's so cool to hear about people from these like really unique places who have very common challenges. And I mean, again, we've talked about good news, bad news. The good news is that you're not alone. You know, there are people just like you in places from all over the world who are going through exactly the same struggle. And we're helping them you know, to have a well-behaved dog. But right now is the time for you to let us know exactly where are you joining the mm-hmm. train station from.
I think it's important to say, too, like we talk a lot, obviously, when we're doing our live streams and our YouTube videos and stuff, we refer to all of our online training, which is fabulous. We have a really great program. But we also have a pretty amazing in-person facility in Flamborough, Ontario. I think a few people asked where our actual training center is located. So believe it or not, we're Canadian, despite what people think. We're from a small town in Canada, and we have a really great facility, and it's open for people to come in and check out classes. So if you're ever in the area, you're traveling by, come in and visit us, and one of our people will show you around the place. Pretty cool.
I see people joining us from Napa, East Lansing, Toronto, not too far away. I see a couple people from Toronto, Southern California, Texas, St. Paul, Minnesota, North York, Brussels, Alberta, London, Brooklyn,
nice.
Near Traverse City, Michigan. Thanks for joining us, Kathy. Severn, Ontario, Oregon, Quebec City, Lake City, Florida, Roseville, Utah, Memphis, Tennessee, Savannah. We just came back. I was doing some YouTube stuff in Utah a couple of weeks ago now, and we were there when it was like 107 degrees or something like that. Fahrenheit, I think. Yeah, it was really hot, but Utah's beautiful. Nashville, Boston, or near Boston, London, England. Thanks for staying up late with us, Nova. I know it's a little bit later there. Memphis, Colorado Springs, Cannon City, Idaho, Texas, and Desert Hot Springs.
Cool beans.
Thanks for joining us tonight, guys. So first things first, we need to talk a little bit about how to, what your expectations should be for your dog if you're dealing with a problem behavior. Mm-hmm. Actually, this would be a good time for you to let me know. What if you could fix one thing tonight, if you have one challenge that you're like, oh my gosh, I can't take this anymore, I have to fix this thing, what is it? Pulling on leash, jumping up, recall, response, like what is that thing? Drop it in the chat because we're going to talk a little bit about what your expectations could be, should be. But we're also going to talk about a couple other steps that you're going to need to apply to this problem that you've got and how you can sort it out.
Sky says we definitely sound Canadian.
Oh, no way.
It's so funny because we don't think we sound that Canadian in comparison to other parts of our country. But I guess if you compare us to others,
yeah,
it's pretty easy to
tell. Well, you just came back.
I say a lot as well.
You just came back from the East Coast, yes, where you were very successful during the national championships, yes, of dog agility.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk about that for just a moment?
Yeah. Well, last week I was over in New Brunswick, which is on the, not complete other side of the country, but pretty far away. And myself, along with a whole bunch of the McCann agility students, were competing at a huge national event and also a tryout for Team Canada for 2024, which is exciting. So I was lucky enough to do quite well with my little border collie, Beeline. We won several of the events and got chosen for the team. So we'll be heading to the Netherlands in May next year to represent Canada. So it was pretty good. The competition was great. The drive home was a little eventful with our car breaking down and us having to navigate that with a bunch of dogs with us, but it turned out to be pretty fun. It's good.
I noticed a lot of you guys are struggling with the same thing.
Yep.
Now there's a lot of barking, I see. A lot of biting, nipping and biting, and it's interesting that a lot of these would come up tonight.
Curious to know the age of the dogs who are nipping and biting.
Yeah, that's good information for help us guide the conversation a little bit. So let's talk about the first thing that you need to assess, decision you need to make when you're dealing with a problem behavior. And we'll talk specifically. Maybe we'll just take. We're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about two of these problem behaviors just to sort of give it a little bit of like shape.
Yep.
Let's talk about nipping and biting as the first one and pulling on leash because that seems to be the most common thing. You can apply this if you're dealing with jumping, barking, all this other stuff. You can apply these same rules to that training. But let's talk a little bit about establishing your expectations in the foundation in fairness, which is your first point, foundation in fairness, about what the dog understands.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're going to work through that.
Yeah, so we'll start with leash pulling first, just because I think it's more broad for all ages of dogs.
Yeah.
So in terms of the expectation, you do need to sort of have a realistic expectation of what your dog should and could do depending on their age. So, you know, we can talk a lot about puppies. It looks like there's some younger dogs in the chat, but a lot of what we say honestly can be applied to any age of dog. When we're giving advice, we don't often restrict the information to the age of the dog. Often it has to do with how much training the dog has had or not, because you can have a 12-month-old dog that's had no training and they're sort of at the same foundational level as a puppy. They
totally.
You might handle it a little bit differently, but the expectation will be the same because they don't have the skills. Anyways, I digress. With the leash pulling, we want to, you know, for example, an unrealistic expectation that people will have with puppies per se is that they get a puppy, they hook the leash on, and they go for a walk around the block. And it is horrible. The puppies are trying to pick this up, and they're trying to pick that up, and they're pulling towards this person, and they're jumping at this and whatever. And it's a bit of a disaster. And then people will say, you know, walking my dog is just so hard. And, you know, it's when you know about dog training, you look at that and think like, well, obviously. But when you don't really know and you just think you're doing the right thing, you know, taking your dog for a walk at a young age when you haven't gone through all of the foundational steps to train your dog to do the walking, of course it's not going to go well. No. 'Cause they don't really know what they're supposed to do. You know, puppies and dogs aren't, they don't get dropped off at your house knowing how to walk perfectly on a leash without pulling or how to respond to their name or how to do anything, really. That's up to us to do it. And sometimes by accident, we end up putting our dogs in situations where we really shouldn't be expecting them to do the thing without us doing the foundational steps first. And I find leash pulling is one of the most common things, because a lot of the time the problem is happening and the person either didn't know or hasn't done any of the foundational steps that we do that allows you to ease into being able to take your dog for a wonderful loose leash, you know, nice walk with your dog without all of the pulling and all of the gagging. So, you know, you want to make sure that you pass kindergarten before you go to university.
Yeah, that's so important. It's not about the age, it's about the level of understanding. Yeah. And we will see comments in on videos that say something like, oh, well, that's great, but this dog's already trained. Or, hey, try that with a wild and crazy dog, which is the worst decision that you could make, taking a dog that's already struggling with some kind of control and attention and putting them in a situation that is definitely going to overface them. Yeah. This is why you're not going to practice leash walking if you can't get any attention. Mm-hmm. Attention is the starting point. We've talked a little bit about this in a few probably leash walking videos.
Yep.
Where the first win, specifically with leash pulling, the first win you need to get is before you even leave the house. Maybe it's in your landing. Maybe it's in your hallway in your apartment. Maybe it's in your kitchen. Whatever that is, you have to be able to get some attention from your dog before you begin that walk. Having a solid foundation is really important. Mm-hmm. And as you build this building up, you know, you do some groundwork. You're teaching your dog to understand that food is valuable. You're teaching your dog to follow food. You're starting to introduce them to, you know, more challenges and distractions as you work on your leash walking training. But you're not taking them for a walk to the park. That's not the goal. At the beginning, you need to focus on foundational mm-hmm. skills. And so let's talk about, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I could run you through very quickly just some more specific examples of what we mean with walking. We have a puppy that's approaching two. I guess we can't really call him a puppy anymore, but I guess he's a puppy until we get another puppy. But one of the things that we did with him before we started actually walking him around the block is we started his leash walking training in the kitchen because there was no distractions. There was hardly anything going on. We could control the environment around him. And he was a rock star in the kitchen because we had the treats and we were showing him and everything was great. Then we worked to the hallway. Then we worked in and around different rooms of the house with him beside us. Then we would do the same thing and then let the other dogs be around. So he had to bypass our other dogs. We had a cat at the time when he was a puppy. So that's sort of what we worked. From there, though, I didn't just then say, okay, let's go for a walk around the block. We then moved to, you know, initially, honestly, being able to stand outside my front door at the top of our steps and have him sit on a loose leash and look at the world around him without running down the steps or trying to bark at the people that are going by. We just literally worked, sit on the steps on a loose leash, check in with me, be calm. And once he learned that, then we practiced walking in the driveway. You can see where I'm getting at here. Baby steps, and I would move on to the next step once I could see that the first step was going really well. And it wasn't just step going. I would, you know, like I said, we would work in the house, but there would be no distractions around. Then we would keep the same skill, but then we would add the distraction. So I could, for example, work my way to the driveway and I could be great in the driveway, but before I go for a walk, maybe Ken comes out with another dog, or maybe he bounces a tennis ball in the driveway and I see if I can navigate my dog away from that distraction. So that mimics, you know, seeing a dog behind a fence when we're out a walk or whatever it might be. So we try to think about setting up the scenarios so that when we get out to do the thing, we have the skills to do the thing because we've already worked that. I already have an idea of what my dog's triggers might be, and I can be more proactive. I can be a good leader. I can give my dog good information, but we take baby steps. And we outline all of this stuff in our programs, but that's sort of like the Coles Notes version of the process on how we would do it without going through the individual steps.
I think that's maybe one of the challenges, you know, when you're just skimming through YouTube and you're getting sort of broken information from different resources where a guided program gives you directly and says, for your dog, this is the right step. But taking, we have all kinds of information on YouTube that talks about management, and management is going to be a critical step in your foundation and fairness. We talk a lot about a house line. We often refer to it as a puppy house line, puppy training house line, but it's a house line for any dog in training. Doesn't matter how you refer to them, whether they're a puppy or an adult dog. If you're working on something, you have to be able to manage the dog appropriately. I know a lot of people in here are struggling with nipping and biting. And in terms of foundation and fairness, your puppy has just, if it's a puppy, has just left their litter. And that's how they interact with one another. It's playful. It's bouncy. And then for us to have an expectation that this dog just isn't going to bite when they come because I'm a human and I'm their owner and like they, I feed them and I buy beds for them and I do the things is unrealistic. So being able to manage that puppy appropriately is a critical step. Let's talk about, you know, what we use when we have a puppy in training who's nipping and biting. And I'll be quite frank here. Nipping and biting doesn't last very long in our household because we have great timing. We talk about how we're going to talk about some of the things a little later on, some of the elements of each skill, each problem solving step that you're going to take. But we understand the foundation that we've got to start at the ground level here and then build up from there.
Yeah. So essentially when we're trying to navigate the nipping and biting phase with young dogs, we kind of have two avenues that we do hand in hand with one another. Number one, we do prevention. So we make the proper preventative steps to ensure that our dogs aren't, the first thing on their mind isn't going to be to nip and bite because we are preventing it from happening. So in situations where, you know, they could nip and bite, we have a leash on or we're training them or they're in a crate or whatever the situation might be. But obviously puppies cannot live their entire life attached to a leash with treats on their nose or in a crate. So the second avenue would be the training that we do that establishes ourselves as a leader. And what people don't know is that when you teach your dog to do a sit stay, you're also at the same time teaching your dog not to nip you. When you teach your dog to come when they're called, you're also at the same time teaching them not to nip you. I literally could go on and on and on with examples here, but what I'm getting at is that when you start to show your dog that you're worth listening to, puppies and dogs don't want to nip and bite at somebody who they feel is of higher value than them, is their leader. They don't nip and bite leaders. That's just, that is dog talk. That's just what happens. So when I start to assert myself, and I'm not talking negative, I'm not talking correction, I'm not talking any of that.
Yeah, everyone hears that and they're like, leader, like, come down, iron fist.
I just not mean like, meaning what I say and saying what I mean, following through. If I say sit, I don't say it 10 times. I make it happen and show the dog what I want them to do. I'm being a teacher. I'm being a helper to make sure that the dog listens. Because the dog doesn't hear all of these things over and over, I don't say things three times and then start to get angry with my voice. I don't portray that type of stuff with the dog. I just do the thing. And if they don't know how to do it, I help them. Or if they're being a bit of a Dinkelheimer Schmidt in the moment, then I'll then make it happen. And I'll do it very calmly. And the dog goes, oh, I guess I have to listen to that thing. And then the more you do that, the less the dog wants to nip and bite. So there's so much more detail, obviously, that we can go into about this, but that's sort of the cream of the crop there. I think a lot of people think, well, how do I correct the nipping and biting? Obviously that there are ways to do that, but what people don't realize is that they're missing the other things, the training and the prevention. And if they would get better at those things, you don't have to do the corrective stuff as much, which is the ultimate goal at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about management, whether it's a skill like leash walking, you need to have your dog on a line. I know someone had mentioned, let's see.
What's
here.
A house line?
No, what I saw was, what's the best way for you, Massey Lee, what's the best way for your dog, teacher dog, to come to you when they're not on the lead?
Good question.
Great question. You don't let them have that opportunity to make the wrong choice. That's what leadership's all about. Mm-hmm. You have a sense of what their level of understanding is. Leash walking, you don't overface them with distraction. Nipping and biting, you don't let them get wild and crazy without some way of reeling them in a little bit. Teaching your dog a recall or response to name, you don't allow them offline if you can't back it up with some training. As we mentioned at the top, if your dog's getting a sense, if your dog's learning that they don't have to respond sometimes they do, That's so confusing for them. So make sure that they don't even know that not responding is an option. You're managing them with a leash or a long line. In the house, it's a house line. You're setting them up to make the right choices. That way they think, this human is brilliant. This human can like stop me from doing the things that I don't want to do. That management is foundational. And it's only fair to put your dog in a situation where you can manage them well.
I want to tell you guys a bit of a secret. So with this management, you know, people often say, okay, the leash is on. He's saying don't take the dog off leash. And then what people end up doing is they end up holding the leash or holding the house line or holding the long line.
That's true.
And they think, well, obviously the dog's good. I'm holding the leash. But how do I get from this to that? So we go over this step by step by step in complete progression in our programs. But I'm going to tell you now that when we're training with a leash, we don't have a tight leash. If you can believe it.
Right.
Because training your dog to listen with the leash on, but the leash being loose, is what leads you to the point where you can actually have the dog off leash, because dogs become leash wise when they feel tension on their collar all of the time. And then all of a sudden you take the leash off, they go, whoa, I feel free. I don't have to listen anymore. So the secret is teaching them to listen on leash without them feeling like they're on leash. And there's way more about how to actually get that done. But that there is what most people miss in their training.
That's a great takeaway for anybody who's training a dog right now at home. Understanding that you're sitting your dog up to make the right choice. Mm-hmm. You're making your dog think that it's up to them, but you're there. If they make the wrong choice, you can guide them away. You can manage them. You can stop them from, getting into trouble, getting hurt. That is a really important point.
A house line, guys, is a line or a leash that is worn in the house. It's on all of the time that the dog is in the house. When they're out of their crate, we cut the handle off so it slips and slides through the, I almost said equipment because my brain's on agility, through the furniture. And it's used with supervision for dog safety and for control. And it allows you to stop any unwanted behavior while establishing good leadership and having great timing.
Yeah. We will suggest people to go to like the dollar store, get a super cheap leash, cut the loop off. But we saw
really good ones.
Yeah. We found that the clips are, word I'm looking for, they're not very trustworthy. So we actually ended up making a purpose-built house line that's got a little like flat tab there, so if your dog gets into something, you're getting into trouble, you can actually step on it and it stops. But we sell these on our store. If you can go check that out, mccanndogs.store. but this is a house line. This thing is going to change the
and
way
they're
you train
light.
Dogs.
They move around
super
and
light.
There's honestly the secret to dog training.
I wanted to get to this. I just pulled a clip from a video when I was on the train on my way in, and then I airdropped it in here. So if you are paying attention to this is going to talk
That's
a little
a
bit
really
about
really nice face that you've paused
I know
on.
This is going to talk a little bit about beautiful. Fairness, but I think it's valuable for you where you are right now with your dog training. Kale speaks a little bit to using food in training, but it's not all about the food. I want you to think bigger than that. I want you to think about fairness in your training. What situation are you putting your puppy or young dog in training in that where you're giving them a little bit too much challenge? So I want you to check this out.
There are some people that say they have dogs that are not interested in working for food. And there is some truth to that. There are some dogs that aren't naturally motivated by food, but we have nearly 500 dogs that come through our training school each week, and we teach all of them how to work for food. So if your dog's not that motivated by food, I want you to consider three things. Number one, is your puppy or dog just not hungry? Maybe they've been eating all day, you've been free feeding them, and they just don't really find the food that valuable or important. Or maybe are they just literally not hungry because they've already had their breakfast or their lunch and they have a small stomach and they can't.
Let me know in the chat, who's got a dog that if they get in certain training situations won't take food or isn't interested in food? Or maybe you've just decided, well, my dog's not really interested in that, in food and training in general.
eat a lot, you might have to change how much you feed in a day in order to build up a little bit more motivation for food. The second thing could be environment. Are you trying to train in an environment that's just too distracting, so your dog is really stimulated or overwhelmed by what's happening? Could they be worried or unsure in that environment? A lot of dogs will not really be interested in eating food if they're feeling stressed or they're feeling a little bit nervous. So you do need to consider your environment and making sure that your dog is actually comfortable in where they're working or not overstimulated or distracted. And then also consider how well they know the skill. Maybe you need to backtrack a little bit to make things easier. And number three, have you actually taught your dog how to work for food at this point? Teaching the dogs to follow food is actually one of the very first things that we do with our puppies when we bring them home. It seems like such a simple, natural thing for puppies to do, but believe it or not, you actually have to teach your puppy how to follow food, how to work for food. And you need to do that very slowly and gradually when your puppy is young, without any distractions around, so they really get the game.
Look at that puppy, he's so cute.
So, you know, I think that's sage advice for anyone who's struggling with a leash walking, anybody that's struggling with a recall, anybody that's struggling with anything where you're putting your dog in a situation where they're like, meh, I don't know, I'm not really interested in you, I'm not really interested in your toy, I'm not really interested in food. You can sort of consider a lot of those things. Are you putting your dog in a situation where they're overfaced? Does your dog have any idea what their name means? How much time have you put in teaching your dog to respond appropriately to their name without even considering?
Are you overusing their name by saying it all the time? You know, and so then what happens is you end up watering it down because you say it so often and you don't actually expect your dog to pay attention to you. If I'm saying, Spot, come here, Spot, sit, Spot, get on your bed, Spot, blah, 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 over and over and over and over again, now Spot doesn't mean anything. So it's really important that you're mindful about how you're using the command as well so that you don't teach your dog just to ignore you.
Monty Mole, my dog doesn't care about one of our heart dog supporters. My dog doesn't care when there are other dogs barking, doesn't really care about treats. There's a couple of videos I think that would be good for you, Monty Mole. Maybe lots of links can drop them. Actually, from that video might be good for them to understand the value of food. Also, when to bring out toys in your training. I think we talk about that in that video. If not, there's definitely a video where we talk about switching out rewards in situations like that. But understanding that there's ground level training that needs to happen. Your dog needs to know, have some idea of how to walk a short distance before you test them and walk any farther. That's important. Foundation and fairness. Are you being fair to your dog? The next thing that you have to consider with your dog's nuisance behavior or problem is timing. I will tell you, the amount of people that complain about their dogs barking in the yard is amazing. But do you ever stop to consider that the dog has no idea that they're doing anything wrong? They're just doing dog stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty self-rewarding to bark for your dog. Feels good. And we have this expectation that, like, well, I mean, every time I put him out in the yard, when we leave the house, we get a call from neighbors. Or every time I put him in the backyard and I go to practice my piano or deal with the kids' homework, the dog starts barking. Well, how does your dog know not to do that? Is it because you come to the back door and shout, hey, knock it off, after they barked, you know, 7, 8, 10 times? That's not good timing. So we have to talk a little bit about situations where your timing needs to be better when we're solving some of these problems. If you're having house training problems, timing is got to be your greatest concern.
Yeah.
Digging in the yard. Honestly, leash pulling. The amount of people that I see that are out there and the dog's hitting the end of the leash and then they're like, okay, well, I better do something about this. I'll tell you why I'm invested in that. It's because that was me before I went to McCann Dogs to become a student. That's exactly what I did. You know, I'd have some desire to get my dog to walk well, and I might walk for half the street or something when I was at home, and then I'd let her pull me all the way back, or I'd let her pull me all the way to the park thinking, oh, this is great, I'm going to tire her out, and then she'd walk nicely on the way back. But I never, ever was showing her appropriately how to do this right.
Yeah.
You know, I just lowered my expectations too much, and my timing was so poor because I wasn't giving her the good information all the time. Let's talk about timing in terms of barking, listening, a little bit.
Yeah. Can we say this?
Yeah.
Because
oh, yeah. Okay.
Somebody had said because we were just talking about food.
Yeah, that's great.
Do we have to work for food forever?
And I'm so glad I love this. Okay.
Somebody asked that because
great question.
It's a perfect segue.
Also speaks to timing. So instead of going to the fixing part, let's talk about the using food in your training timing problem.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people are initially alarmed if they see a lot of our foundation training and they see how much food and positive reinforcement that we use. Some people think, well, that's fine and great, but like, I don't want to have to use treats in order to get my dog to listen to me, you know, forever.
Yeah.
And we love when people say that because we agree with you. We don't think a well-trained dog is a dog that is dependent on any type of tool. They should just want to listen to you because they love you and they enjoy listening to you. But we have to get there some way. And using food as a motivator is a really good option. But here's where the dependence of food or the timing comes in. You know, if your dog's not listening to you and you think like, oh, he's not listening, and you pull food out and shake the thing or you get treats to get them to listen, well, you will become dependent on the food because the dog says, if I don't listen a couple times, watch what she does. She goes and she grabs that cookie and she begs me to come in.
Who's guilty of this?
Yeah.
Like it's so common. You know, you go to the backyard and you've let your dog out to go pee or whatever.
Yeah.
And scooter, nothing. Well, I guess I got to go get the cookie bag.
Yeah. I see this all of the time when people want their dogs to lie down. They say down. Oh, okay, fine. They get a treat out and they lure the dog down. And the dog's just laughing at you inside saying like, okay, bring out the treats. So that is sort of you repeat the command too much and then you pull out food and then you become dependent on it. But there's actually a more detailed thing that we can share with you as well. And that is the timing in which you reward food. So when we're trying to teach our dogs to listen without being dependent on the food, we are very conscious that when we're giving any type of cue, physical cue or verbal cue, that we're not presenting the food prior or at the same time as giving that cue. Because what will start to happen, you know, if I ask Ken to do something for me and at the same time I was like, for Ken, I would be holding a cupcake, he would do anything that I wanted because he says, well, she's holding a cupcake, so chances are if I do that thing, she's probably going to give it to me. So if I'm trying to train my dog to do something and I get to the point where I don't want to depend on food anymore, we use the food very effortlessly in the early stages. But once I get to the next step and I have food in my hand, we try to make it a little bit less obvious by having the food away, asking the dog for the skill, and then presenting the food to follow through until the dog hears the skill and says, I don't need that treat anymore. I know what to do. And then they start listening just to the voice. So the timing and how you present information to your dog needs to actually be done in a calculated way so that you do not become dependent on the food. Same thing goes for the leash. Same thing goes for the house line, whatever it might be. So there's actually a dog training formula that we follow in the McCann method that prevents you from becoming dependent on the food, all while motivating the dog to listen in the first place.
Yeah, there's something we use. So many people are familiar with the clicker.
Is that Five or Funky whining?
I don't know.
Okay.
So many people are familiar with the clicker, and we actually use our voice. We use the word yes to mark that great choice, the great behavior that we want, and that's a great way to scale out food create a positive association with a sounding, in this case it's a word, that's associated with the receiving of food, but we've loaded all the value on the word, and that's part of the training. We've published a few videos specifically on this topic. It's a little bit nuanced, so you know, I don't think a lot of people have watched those videos, but I'll tell you, the videos, that those are the ones that you're going to make the most ground on, those where you really start to learn the mistakes that you're making in your dog training. With that said, we use the word yes that starts to replace the food. It marks that moment in time. It marks the behavior for the dog. Mm-hmm. And that's how we stop. It's not the donkey and carrot thing the whole time. At the beginning, that's great. At the foundation, you need it. But we want to get away from that because we want the dog listening to our voice, not necessarily whatever's in our treat pouch or in our
pocket. And if I can do a little circle back here to our very first thing where we talked about foundation and fairness, Ken just brought up a really good point. It's not the donkey and carrot when we get to the point where we don't want to become dependent on the food. But if we look at people's track record of when they're doing the training and they, you know, want the dog to listen without the food, often that person hasn't done the donkey and carrot phase.
Right.
And that's why the dog's not good.
Or sped through it.
Yeah, because they haven't taken the time to put in the value of listening to that skill or doing that thing by making it dead easy and positive. And then from there, we move on to the next step. So we've got to do all of the different phases together in order to get the best results. So if we're skipping things, you're not going to get the reliability and the expectation that you really, truly could.
It makes me think of a couple things. I think of that military saying, we say it in the fire service, and I know Instructor Carol said it as well. It is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And sometimes if you feel like things are going horribly awry in your dog training or your puppy training, you need to slow down and take a look at what's going wrong. Where is this all falling apart? This might not apply to leash walking specifically, because sometimes if you slow down, physically slow down, it gets way more challenging. So finding a good pace is important. But slowing down the process of like what's going wrong is going to help you to be a little bit more analytical and figure out what some of your challenges, which challenges really making things fall apart. Next thing we have to talk about. So we've talked about foundation and fairness. We figured out, or you've decided that you're not going to have too high of expectations of your dog who doesn't understand the skill or the behavior yet. You've decided that you're going to teach them a foundation. So if it's jumping up, teach your dog a sit at your side. An incompatible behavior. Mm-hmm. If every time you go for a walk they're jumping like crazy on people, then you need to teach your dog to remain in at your side as people approach. That having built so much value on that sit at your side, that has a million and one uses, especially when it comes to leash walking. But teaching them that skill as a foundational introduction to leash walking or jumping up training or whatever is going to put you in a good situation when you encounter an unusual situation mm-hmm. on your walk, because mm-hmm. you've got that default behavior. But we have to talk about consistency. And
the big one.
Yeah, this is a real challenge for a lot of people. And I get it, you know. Some days
it's hard to be consistent.
Yeah. Some days you just don't feel like training. Some days you feel overwhelmed.
Or
some
you're
days
busy, you're tired. Absolutely. Or you're whatever, annoyed or whatever yeah. it might be. And everybody goes through it. Even, you know, us as dog trainers,
yep.
it's impossible to be perfectly consistent all of the time.
Yeah, and that's okay. But identifying that, having some alternative things you can do with your dog. So I love this one. People often say like, well, I mean, this dog is a wild thing in the house. What am I supposed to do if I'm not supposed to take them for a walk? Well, there's a million things you can do. Play a game of tug. Maybe play a game of fetch. Mm-hmm. Maybe do some restrained recalls, which I'll have lots of links Luton drop in the chat of like doing restrained recalls. But that's the kind of burning off of energy, which is great. It's also super consistent because you aren't allowing your dog to rehearse the bad stuff. Are you going to say something?
I was just thinking of that great video that we did quite a while back now where we did ways to tire your dog out. I think we did it during COVID, actually. Ways to tire your dog out in the living room.
Yeah.
And it was like a small space, and we had like all kinds of fun things, and you didn't need a lot of skills to do it, but it was a great way. So if people couldn't walk their dogs or you were stuck in that moment, was for other reasons. But, you know, if your dog's not trained yet to do, you know, walking, but you need an outlet to get some energy out, there are other things that you can do. And we have lots of videos on that can kind of walk you through and give you some examples.
Totally. But that's the kind of consistency we're talking about. You know, it can be challenging when you're like, well, what do I do next? What do I do with my dog when this? What do I do with my dog when that? Mm-hmm. Well, if you have an opportunity to have skills, a plan, which is where our Life Skills Program or our Puppy Essentials Program comes in perfectly, is you have a plan. You have a laid out, structured plan that's appropriate for your dog. Maybe we can talk just briefly about that.
Yeah, there's definitely a great plan so you can kind of navigate the information and know like kind of where to do what. But I would say the biggest value of doing any program, whether it's online or whether it's in person with us, is we can tailor the program or adapt it for you and your dog once we get to know you and your dog. Because, you know, we have a McCann method that we teach, but it is not a one-size-fit-all method. It works for all kinds of different dogs because we can make small tweaks for the person or for the dog to make sure that the job's getting done. You know, how you would train a small, you know, worried or crazy energetic dog might be different than how you would train like a big boisterous dog, or maybe a dog that's nervous or whatever. So there's lots of different things that we're going to do that we can tweak. And it can be really helpful when you're getting guidance of an instructor to say, hey, I'm trying this and it's not working. What do I do? Well, if you're an online student, we can watch a video in about 30 seconds. We can say, your hand should be here. Your timing's a bit off. You should actually reward your dog, you know, in this position rather than, and it's like, oh my gosh, now I can get, and then you can kind of get going from there. So just the feedback of the instructors and the time in which you get it is instrumental in how much progress you're going to make and the support system that goes along with it.
Yeah. People will say like, well, I mean, what's different in your online training than your YouTube?
Because it's completely different.
I know it is, but these guys don't. I think maybe that's offered in some places. But there's actual dog trainers that are overseeing your training and are helping you through the process, which is what you desperately need. I'm not a golfer, but I had a tournament with my, I work for the fire department as well. I had a tournament with my crew, and I'd practiced hitting balls, hitting drives, which I don't, obviously, I think that's what it's called, hitting drives.
You're asking the wrong person.
I know. And they would constantly like fade, I think, off to the right. I hit over and over and over again. I practiced more and more. As this tournament got closer, I was like, I have to get better. And then I had a lesson with a swing coach for about, 45 minutes, maybe an hour, and it changed everything. So, you know, doing things over and over, even if the amount of practice doesn't matter if you're not doing them right. Mm-hmm. And in a moment, I went from like, oh, he said I was chopping wood, which, you know, I guess I was like swinging in or something. And it changed my swing entirely. Exact same thing with dog training. You can practice over and over and over again on what you think is the right thing, but a tiny tweak can make a world of difference. That's the benefit of joining us online for your training.
Yeah.
Anyway, the spiel is over.
And if you join online, you don't have to wait for a program to start. You literally can just start tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see you in class on we have a live class every Monday, but the classes are 7 days a week. It's all the time is the program, but you can start now.
Yeah. Talking about bringing us back to consistency, which so many people struggle with. I mentioned my situation where I would let the dog pull on half the walk. And this is also something I hear from people who are trying to teach their dog to walk on a loose leash. But, you know, half the walk goes great. And then as soon as we make the turn for home, things fall apart. So what do you think you should do in that situation? Like, what are some immediate ideas you'd have for a dog that you want to teach them to walk on a loose leash, but if you are going around the block, the first half's great, the second half is no good? What if you reduce the distance? What if we weren't worried about how big the walk was? What if we focused on being really specific and critical of that nice leash walking at your side? That's the kind of focus that we want from your dog. And if instead of going around the block, maybe you go from light post to light post. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in the country, which I know...
mailbox to mailbox.
Mailbox to mailbox. Maybe it's, you're in a parking lot, in your apartment, or wherever. Shorten the distance, but make sure it's great leash walking.
Yeah.
And focus on that. That's the difference. And people who do that, it's so interesting, especially when we get students in class that I see, like in our in building, that I see... I can almost tell right away, like, they're going to be really good about insisting that their dog is listening, that their dog is doing the right thing, and also understand that, like, you're going to have some rough days, and, you know, you just got to get a win and then get out. But that consistency is so important. Jumping up. Nipping and biting. Let's talk about that. Nipping and biting. The amount of people that I know, there's a family, and you're like, I don't know, my spouse just loves when he chews on his hand or her hand. Like, they don't care. They think it's cute. And I'm struggling here. It's important that you have a very honest conversation with that family member and say, listen, I'm working really hard to try to get this puppy to listen. And the one thing we're struggling with is nipping and biting. Now, they said on this YouTube live stream, or they said in my online class, or they said in my class, this is not good for the dog. We need to figure this out. I think that's the kind of conversation that you need to have, because consistency is so important for your dog, especially during this impressionable phase.
Another situation where I see that is sometimes the, like, I'll see a student's dog, like, gnaw on their arm or whatever, and I'll go over to assist them with it, and they'll be like, oh, no, He just has to go to the bathroom.
He's just mouthing.
Or yeah,
he's
just, you know, yeah. He's teething, or he just needs to go to the bathroom. And I think, well, do you want to be asked to go to the go potty by him gnawing on your arm for the rest of his life? Like, we need to maybe choose a different communication avenue than nipping and biting. But that's the consistency. If the, like, if you let your dog do that, and other times your grandmother's over and your puppy's gnawing on her arm, that's not okay. So we have to be black and white with dogs. And honestly, dogs appreciate that. They like when things are black and white. They don't like gray areas. They don't like sometimes rules. They like things to be clear so that they can go, okay, got it. Not allowed to do this, but I am allowed to do this. And if we can give them that with swift information and, you know, positive reinforcement when they need it, but we can be consistent, you can really affect change quite quickly.
Bryant, I'm going to say this is in the nicest way, and I want this. I want you to take this away, like, with a you know, positive spin. Okay, any tips on puppy biting, targeting face, cheeks, chins? Double chins, noses, and ears. Bryant, you can't put your puppy in a situation where that can happen. Not right now.
Yeah,
not
right now. Your puppy shouldn't be anywhere near your face to even let that happen.
Absolutely.
That might mean maybe you have the puppy up on the couch on you, or you're getting down on the floor with the puppy, but you need to change the status, the...
Allow your puppy up in those situations.
Keep them away from your face.
Yeah, right, really. And don't get down on their level. The puppy sees that as a playful behavior. Mm-hmm. Your puppy thinks this is fun. Now, eventually, you're going to be snuggling. It's going to be the best. You know, maybe the puppy's sleeping on your chest.
There's
on the couch.
There's a lot of snuggling that happens at our house.
100%, but not right now. Not while you're working on this. You're
and
working
not if
through
they're,
your
if they're making those choices, then we're not going to be doing those types of behaviors with our dogs. We want to make sure that we're establishing the rules first and our dog has a good understanding of elevation. Thank you, Albert. We want to make sure our dog is established about where it's supposed to be. Yes, I'm in bed. Okay, Bryant.
Yes. Oh, okay. This is so common.
Puppy, not on bed for now. Yep. Later, sleep all you want with him. That's fine. But right now, I think puppy needs to be in a crate beside your bed if you want to, so that you guys can be close together. We love that. We actually, when we raise our puppies for the first couple weeks, this is going to sound like a crazy dog person, but we love doing this.
Also, 21-time world champion of dog agility.
And so somebody who has dogs that absolutely loves her, and I absolutely love my dogs.
Right.
But I move everything off my bedside table, and my puppies sleep in their crate beside my bedside table. So they're in a crate, literally beside me, so that if they stir or if I need to get up, I hear them right away. And then from there, after a few weeks and we're sleeping through the night, which is usually happens within the first week, then down to the ground they go, and they sleep in a crate beside our bed, you know, for a long time before we feel comfortable with them, you know, sleeping out and knowing that they're not going to get any mischief. But you need to start that tonight, my friend.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, honestly, it speaks to the consistency.
Watch the video. We're doing it. Good job.
That's it. Great.
Good job.
That speaks to the consistency.
Yeah.
You know, if you're giving your dog sort of mixed signals about, okay, sometimes it's okay, and sometimes you can go on the bed. And actually, what we have a video somewhere I captured Five Alive, like, doing a puppy burn on a bed and nipping and biting. And he generally wouldn't do that kind of thing. But that
he
elevation.
He was in a scenario where it was easy for him to do it.
That's right. Because it's fun. And I get it. But
we may have been laughing because we were trying to get the video and we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we let this happen all of the time? It would be awful.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. They're like, I can't wait for my puppy to sleep in my bed. We can't wait either. But we're going to make sure that they have the foundation in fairness, that we've made sure that we've had good timing giving them information, whether it's the right stuff. Good boy, girl, or leave that, knock it off, whatever, and that we've been consistent about the information.
Yeah.
The same thing, I don't want to take us off on too many tangents, but I mean, potty training, jumping up, barking, digging, loose leash walking, I may have said that already, like all of these things require consistency in your training. And what are those moments that you're seeing right now, you're like, oh, geez, you know what? I do let my dog jump on my neighbors, because they love it and they love dogs. Well, you can actually put that on a command. And down the road, when your dog has an understanding of when it's okay that they're allowed to jump up, actually our puppy will jump from like 12 feet away up into Kale's arms on a command.
And I catch him.
And full speed. Like, it is remarkable. Mm-hmm. But if we were struggling with him jumping up on us or other people, that wouldn't happen. that just wouldn't happen. We wouldn't let it happen. And we have a house line on to make sure it didn't happen.
And otherwise, you know what you can do is, you know, when you learn a little bit more about training, you can learn to use your neighbor as a reward. You know, if your dog is so excited to go see your neighbor, this is just a general scenario, instead of letting them drag you to them and then get pets, make them sit on a loose leash for 30 seconds and then let them go get pets by your neighbor. So the dog's still getting that reward that they want, but they're doing something that's worthy of getting that reward instead of allowing them to rehearse the bad stuff. So we're not saying that you can't do the thing, but you want to make sure that you're not allowing the bad behavior to happen while you're doing the thing. That's the point.
Debbie, one of our heart dog members, says, my dog's scared in the car. He started to get better until he heard a loud motorcycle. Now she shakes and is a nervous wreck on car drives.
Oh, sad.
We talked a little bit about, in a recent video, we talked about how to build value for your dog getting in the car. And using something like a crate can be a really valuable tool for this kind of situation. Now, Debbie, this might be, you know, I don't want to give you information that put your dog in a tough scenario or put you in a tough scenario. Might be more appropriate for something like a private lesson. But I would start, if you can get a crate in your vehicle, that might be a good place to start, because then your dog can be safe. They can't get into trouble, and you can also start to load value on the crate being a really good place to go while they're on a car ride.
And I just might add a tip that will be pretty safe for you to do once you've done what Ken suggested by having the crate. Start off by just having the dog go in the crate without turning your car on and leaving the house. You can just have them go in and eat their meals, or just get them having a positive experience going into the car area without the added stress of the engine being on or the movement of the car or whatever it might be. Sadly, something like this does take a while to fix or to improve, because we kind of have to go at the pace that's appropriate for the dog, which it's all different for each dog. But it can be done. But yeah, like Ken said, if you want a little bit more guidance, you probably should work with somebody, because they could help you with the pace.
Yeah. SK Arnold, one of our heart dog members. What about barking at new noises or sights around the home or the backyard?
Well, this is something that it can be a challenge, but for sure, often it shows that the dog maybe needs a little bit more socialization. And
and what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, exactly.
We should talk about what that means.
Environmental awareness. So I don't mean like going to the dog park and playing with other dogs. I just mean like experiencing things. You know, when dogs are a little bit nervous about new things, we need to make more of a point of getting the dog out and about and doing things and giving them really good experiences. That might be, you know, going and standing outside your local bank for a little while, or, you know, go grab some ice cream with your dog and just let them like sit with you as you are out and people are kind of milling around and not really paying much attention to them. You know, more life experience is really going to be helpful. The spooking or the reactions to the new noises, I would be hesitant to be upset with the dog in those scenarios, because the dog's just reacting to being a little bit unsure. The best thing to do in those situations is to redirect the dog's attention to something else. So call their name, get them thinking about their favorite trick. Just do something that puts the dog in a different mental state, and be aware. Obviously, we can't control every noise that may pop up out of the blue, but the more we can kind of check out the environment and ensure that we're putting the dog into a safe one will help minimize those situations from happening.
Yeah, I know quite a few people had challenges with barking. We had a dog that we actually, it might have been Euchre, that we worked through like cars driving by, and we'd work on like trick training, playing tug, doing something, getting Euchre to engage in a skill. I can't remember all the things we did, but I do remember like standing in a sit-in at your side while cars drove by, and just rewarding her for making great choices. Like,
we did a whole video of attention beside the road with her.
Did we?
Yep.
Yeah.
Dan and I shot it together, and there was also a lot of focus on, because she's not that food motivated, conquering that challenge with a dog that's not terribly food motivated. So it's actually a pretty good video.
Yeah, that would be good if you have a dog that...
Yes, the driveway video. That's right.
Is, reacts in some of those situations. Because as Kale said, if you can get them engaging in something else, they aren't thinking about like what that other thing is. And again, being with them, So if your dog's barking at new things when you're not out there, that's your fault.
Yeah.
You need to be out there giving them great information.
Take them out on leash with some treats or their favorite toy, or be armed with things that can help them.
For sure. So when we're overcoming some of these challenges in your dog training journey, because it's a journey, you need to be considering the foundation and fairness. Does my dog understand this skill, and am I giving them the appropriate amount of challenge in this situation? You need to have great timing. Whether it's the good stuff or the bad stuff, your dog is always learning. And in an absence of information, they're going to assume that whatever feels good, whatever tastes good, is the right thing. So you got to have great timing to give them that information. And consistency. I can't express how important consistency is. It is so important to your dog training. It's what undoes so many people's hard work, is a couple repetitions of the dog not responding to their name, the couple repetitions of the dog pulling down the street, and then they learn it's an option.
For those of you who join us on a consistent basis, just a little heads up, next month Ken and I are doing a bit of traveling, so the train station is going to be a slightly different schedule, but we'll post about when that will be. But I just wanted to give you guys a heads up.
Kale's off to another world.
I am. I'm going to the Czech Republic for the largest agility world championship in the world. And I'm nervous / excited, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I've trained. We're ready. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm pumped, though. It'll be an interesting experience.
Yeah, I think you're going to enjoy it. You always do well when you're under pressure. So that's exciting. It's going to feel weird if you win another one. I've said 21-time world champion of dog agility. So many times. I don't know, 22. I don't know.
It doesn't have the same ring.
It doesn't feel the same. Yeah.
So don't win a medal so or, that it doesn't
win,
sound so good.
Or win two of
them. Yeah, that's
23
right.
23 world.
Yes. No, we'll be in Liberec, Czech Republic, but Beeline's not won a medal yet. And she's like she's like my best trained dog I've ever had. But
no medals yet?
No, I keep messing up one little thing. Mm. So she's done well in Canada, but when we've gone overseas, one tiny thing has stopped us from getting a medal. So I'm hoping that this time our time.
Yeah. Do you play music for your dog? We went on a trip recently, actually to an American Championships, and we have a sound-sensitive dog. During that trip, we noticed how sound-sensitive she was. The Airbnb we were staying in, there was trucks driving by, and it was
so
noisy.
Loud.
She was really stressed out, and it was at that moment we decided we have to do something about this. Mm-hmm. So McCann Dogs has worked together with some music and content creators to create a playlist of music that is specifically for dogs, with the right tempo and format and tones that like fill a space so that your dog can be relaxed and comfortable no matter where they are. We have unique playlists. If you check out Spotify and Apple Music, we have like playlists for thunderstorms, if your dog's afraid of thunderstorms or fireworks. We just have general playlists for like crate training when you leave the house, etc. At the end of tonight's show, when I hit the end show button, it's gonna offer you a chance to go check out the McCann Dogs music channel. If you have a dog who loves to, it's more relaxed during music, which most dogs are, but if you have a dog or you're playing music for your dog, definitely stick around to check that out. I want to thank you guys.
I want to say one more thing. Instructor Alexis, who happens to be my sister, his sister-in-law. This is her last train station.
That's true.
For quite some time, because she is going to be having a baby in just a few weeks. So if you guys can show her some love, we're going to miss her.
We're going to have some new McCann.
The first McCann baby.
Yeah, that's right.
Very exciting.
Very exciting.
Anyway, so show Lexi some love in the chat, because we're going to miss her here.
Show her some love.
Yeah.
That's it. I want to thank you guys for joining us, all of the Team Heart Dog, all of our instructors. But the most important thing is, with all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things that we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you.